Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Fresh Take from What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood. This is Margaret, and today I am talking to authors Simone Davies and Juniper Uzadike. They are veteran Montessori educators who are beloved globally. Simone teaches Montessori classes in the Netherlands and hosts the incredibly popular The Montessori Notebook blog. And Juniper sits on the executive board of the International Montessori Association and runs a school in Abuja, Nigeria. Their book, The Montessori Child, A Parent's Guide to Raising Capable Children with Creative Minds and Compassionate Hearts, is available now. Welcome to you both.
Thank you so much.
So
thank you for having us.
Welcome. I think that in the US, we were just speaking a moment before we got on, Montessori is often thought of as something for preschool kids, that we have what are called Montessori schools, and they are preschools, basically. And so Montessori is something that is relevant in a lot of people's minds for kids 3 to 4 years old. So Juniper, talk a little bit about why that's not a correct perspective and how in the book, the work of Montessori goes throughout childhood, and maybe even more interesting, the work of Montessori comes a lot from the parental side as well.
All right. So yes, you're right. For the longest time, many people have assumed that Montessori is a school, a kind of school. And usually they think it's only for children from, you know, maybe 3 to 4 or 5. But even in Montessori's time, she actually had programs developed for children from birth and until 12. The 6 to 12, she was developing more towards the end of her life. But after she died, her son took over and actually developed it further. But beyond being a way that children learn in school, she also thought of it as a way for parents, for moms to raise their children, for dads to raise their children. And for us, what we have done is written it in such a way that it seems accessible, or it is accessible to parents all over the world. It is a way of being with your children. It's a philosophy, a way of life, a lens through which you can view your children, that you can interact with them. So it's a way for people to set up their homes, to allow their children to be independent, a way to be with your children, a way to respond to your children. And this can start even from when your child is in utero, when you're pregnant, you can already start to think about how to support them, talking to them, singing to them, creating little routines, even from when you're pregnant. And then as they're born, creating a home environment that supports them, viewing them as capable, even from birth, and then going through their early years, continuing to support their development of independence. And then as they grow older, from 6 to 12, giving them a different kind of independence. So in the first few years, we're giving them functional independence, where we're allowing them to do things for themselves, giving them the opportunities to do things for themselves, showing them how to do it, and creating an enabling environment that allows them to do things for themselves. But then as they get older, we're allowing them to think for themselves. So we're supporting them on how to find answers to the questions that they may have, you know, giving them those questions that allow them to think, giving them the tools, showing them how to think. And then as they get even older, because in the book, there's an extra chapter that deals with adolescence. teaching them how to fend for themselves, right? How to be social, how to be amongst others, how to think and make decisions for themselves. And this might be moral decisions. So it's really a way of life that can grow with your child from birth until adulthood. It's a way for the, it helps the adults think differently, view their children differently, and then really establish their role. What is your role in your child's life? And that role changes as the child grows. And we really help you start to understand what that role is and how you can be. So it is a way of education in a school environment, but more than that, it's a way of being with our children and guiding them as they go from birth until adulthood. And I hope that people can find ideas for this in the book.
There are so many. I want to just give a shout out for the book, that the layout of the book is extremely accessible. And one of the things we talk a lot about on the podcast is trying not to offer any mom any more work. You know, that a lot of times we are presented with, there's a secret chest out there that has these solutions that are going to make everything okay. And you, mom, it's your job to go and find it. And one of the things I really like about this book is the information is presented extremely in a very accessible way. And it says on the back cover, the antidote for overwhelmed parents. So it's not about taking on something else. It's a solution for parental overwhelm. Simone, can you talk a little bit from that point of view of, first of all, why are we all feeling so overwhelmed? I mean, most of us, you know, chose to have children, sought to have children, wanted to have this experience, love our children, want the best for them. I mean, anyone listening to this podcast has really opted into parenting, right? They're out there seeking solutions. Why this sense of overwhelm, and how does Montessori and the book particularly offer solutions to that overwhelm?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely overwhelming having a family these days, because you have the pull from work and balancing it with our family lives, because most of the people who are reading this book is for children from 3 to 12 years old and then into adolescence. You know, they're often back to work. And even if you're a stay-at-home parent, there's a lot on our plates and we're juggling that all. There's also a lot of negative vibes going on. If you read the media, immediately we get drawn into all of the overwhelm from what's happening in society, what's happening with the climate, what's happening in other parts of the planet, the political situation we may not be happy with. So that feels overwhelming and out of our control. And what I love about Montessori is it takes a step back, and it's actually often less is more. So instead of doing more, we want to be more. When we talk about this observation that Jennifer was talking about, looking at our child with a lens, then actually we, instead of thinking, oh, we need to do all these things for our child, why don't we stop, observe, look at what our child needs, and then we can step in. And so we're learning to respond rather than just react to everything that keeps happening in our lives. And one of the big things I think that helps with overwhelm is coming up with some family agreements so that everyone's clear. So I used to call them house rules, and it's really not house rules because they're agreements that are made with the whole family. And once they're above 3, definitely by the time they're 6, they can be involved in making those agreements. And then because they've had a part in agreeing on them, then you just have to say, oh, what's our agreement about rough play? And they might say, oh yeah, rough play by mutual consent, which is a real mouthful for like a child, but you come up with your own kind of one, but they know what that means. And I used to just kind of say like, oh, I heard stop, because that's our word. And then the children knew, oh, actually we have to stop now because someone says stop. Or I could prompt them by saying, oh, it sounds like someone needs to say stop. And then other times I can just be like a houseplant and I'm sitting on the side watching them fighting and just seeing if I need to step in or if it's just one of those things they need to sort out from themselves. So it can be the way that we act, we're responding instead, that is less. It's also about not overscheduling children and giving them more time and space in their week and their days to explore. And you actually see your children become happier because they've got less overwhelmed themselves. It's also about setting up our homes that's less is more. So often we say, we've got so many toys, and the children still say, Mom, I'm bored. I'm bored.
Yes.
And actually, when we pull away a lot of the things that are on our shelves and in our homes and actually put out less things that are based on observation, based on our child's interests, we see, oh, actually, when there's fewer things out, you know, when you go on holidays, you just take a few things and they manage to come up with great creative ideas, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's actually having great storage and putting most of the things away. And then you realize, oh, I don't actually need to buy as much stuff. And then I'm not spending lots of time, you know, buying on Amazon or, you know, things like that. We're looking at just what we have. And it's all about stepping back, taking a big breath, and also looking after ourselves. And so it's about working with the child, the environment, and the adult. It's not just all the adult's responsibility. It's actually how we support our child.
I think that's crucial to it, that I think we often are told, especially in parenting writing and parenting books, that we are kind of being handed a lump of clay, and it is our job to stay up all night and read and figure out how to shape this lump of clay into exactly what we want them to be, society needs them to be, and also somehow a creature that will, in the US, get into Harvard and Yale and somehow be, you know, famous. I don't know, all these different things that people think that they want. And when we come back from this break, I want to talk about this idea of the guide as opposed to the sculptor. And I think that it's really interesting for people. So we'll be right back.
Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew. And believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies. And as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at 'em. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
More and more, you hear about the importance of electrolytes as part of staying hydrated, because you need the sodium and the potassium, not just the water. And whether you're looking to hydrate during a workout, while traveling, or at the end of a long night, Sports Research Hydrate Electrolytes have got you covered with over 65 trace minerals, 7 essential vitamins, and coconut water powder.
Crisp and refreshing and without any sugar, this is hydration powered by Sports Research. They're little packets you can just grab and take with you to mix into your water bottle on the go. My favorite flavor so far, Amy, gotta be the cherry pomegranate.
Interesting. My high schooler likes the lemon lime, and she keeps a few handy in her backpack for days that she has practice after school. These electrolytes have the sodium and the potassium that you need to go with it in the optimal ratio for daily hydration.
Visit sportsresearch.com and use code WHATFRESH at checkout for 50% off your purchase of Hydrate.
That's Sports Research, SPORTSRESEARCH, sportsresearch.com, and use code WHATFRESH for 50% off your Hydrate electrolytes order.
So, Jennifer, before we took a break, I was talking about this very central idea in the book of the guide, that is the parental role. Can you talk a little bit about the concept of the guide versus what I think people sometimes get trapped in, which is the idea of the sculptor or the molder of children, and what the role of the guide that is laid out in this book really looks like?
So in Montessori, we view the parent or the adult more as a guide. And it's really, again, in the view that we have of the child. So many times, many people view their children as maybe someone who they have to mold, who they have to create to a vision that they have in themselves. Like, so I have this picture of what my child should be, a successful, you know, whatever you have in your mind. But really, we view our children differently. An example that I like to give, or an analogy, is to think about a seed, right? When you take a seed and you plant the seed, when you water the seed, you don't really tell the seed what to do. It already has the plant inside of it. You're basically the nurturer of the conditions. You have to make sure it's good soil. You have to make sure it's enough water. You have to make sure there's sunlight. But the seed by itself knows what to do. It has the plant in itself already. So that's kind of what we do as guides. We're not trying to create the plant that will come out of the seed. No, we're creating the enabling environment. We make sure that our homes are nurturing, have warmth for our child, that our child feels loved and supported, our child feels understood. So we give ourselves knowledge. So we read, you know, we study to understand what the child's natural development is. And then we observe our child, because even though there are prescriptions for what children should do, you know, a child is supposed to walk at so and so age, or a child is supposed to, each of our children are unique and will follow their own unique timeline. You can plant three seeds of the same plant on the same day, but three of them will develop differently. So knowing that our children are unique, so taking time to understand our unique child and then guiding them might look like observing them, modeling to them, you know, how they are supposed to be. So if a child is an environment where language is spoken, they will learn how to speak the language. So our work is not necessarily to teach them a language, but even just by speaking that language, modeling to them the behaviors that we want to see in them, but then also trusting and allowing them to follow their own individual parts. So it's really, again, just a way to see the child. A guide also sees the child's capacity, knows that they're able to do things. And so when you see them trying to do something, if they're struggling, you see, you're observing and seeing, what do I need to show them? How much help do I need to give them without taking over the process? I'll share a story of that I someone just shared with me like a few minutes ago that kind of illustrates for me how a guide behaves, or what a difference between a guide and instructor. So I have a parent whose daughter was supposed to give a presentation in school about seashells. And so her mom shared with me that she came out last week. She was supposed to be in bed already, but she was working with her Lego and making Lego earrings. And so she said her first reaction was to tell her, why are you still up building Lego at this time of the night? You should be in bed. But she's a Montessori mom, and she knows that usually there's a logical explanation. And so she asked her, what are you doing? You know, it's 9 p.m. And so her daughter shared with her, I'm giving a presentation tomorrow on seashells. And I noticed that my Lego set has some shells that I can put an earring hook on. So she wanted to wear those seashell earrings as part of her presentation. So it's just understanding that there's usually a logical explanation, right? We can have conversations with our children to understand. And as Simone said earlier, we're responding instead of reacting. We're not looking at our children and like trying to draw conclusions without truly observing. And as they get older, having conversations with them. We know that they are logical as they get from 6 to 12, they have a logical mind. So being a guide is telling them what is happening. When we give them what our expectations are, or if we have a conversation about what is happening, we listen. When they tell us why, because they start to ask why a lot, we're not just saying because I said so. We're helping them to understand the rules. We're helping them to be independent in their decision making. So we know that if they understand why, then they'll be able to make those decisions for themselves as they get older. So those are some examples of how a guide is different. A guide is allowing the child to develop in their own way, at their own pace, setting those boundaries, but carrying the child along, knowing that we're trying to build independence with them. And independence always starts with dependence. We're doing things for the child, we're feeding them, and then it goes to collaboration. We're doing with them. So whether it's feeding, whether it's making decisions, whether it's dressing up, everything we do with our children follows the same path. Even reading, right? First of all, we're reading to them when they're babies, and then we read together. Maybe they're reading, and if they come to a challenging word, we tell them what that word is, and then gradually they start to read independently. So that's the path that it follows in many things. We're going from dependence to collaboration to independence. And that's something that makes a guide different, because you know that that's the process. And so you're willing to follow that path to independence. Our goal is always to give our children independence, but we know that it's a process and we're happy to walk with them on that journey.
I love the metaphor of the plant, because I think that so often where we get lost as parents, and we sometimes on the podcast use the metaphor of a boat, that we sometimes think we're the driver of the boat and the child is sitting in the boat and we just take them around. And that in fact, we're not even in the boat. They're in their own boat. And we're just kind of maybe on the sidelines and trying And I really like the metaphor of the plant, because you can tell a plant what to be and talk to it all day about what its goals should be. You could do all of those things, but it doesn't change the plant. It just makes yourself crazy. And I think that for a lot of parents, what gets in the way of this, and tell me, Jennifer, if you agree with this, that it's anxiety. It's the idea that we have so much control over our kids, and that need to want the plant to turn out a very specific way when we don't really have a lot of control over it. So how do we step away from that anxious idea that we should be doing more and feel more comfortable in the role of guide?
I think that, you know what I found? I found that once you start, you'll find that it's actually easier. Like, it's just a decision. You just start and you'll see that you start to actually enjoy your children. You start to enjoy the process of parenting, and it gets easier as you go. It's one of those things that you just, you know, you make a decision, and it's hard in the beginning. You make a decision that you trust. I say a lot that we have to trust the process. And it's really hard because many of us were not raised this way. We were raised with, you know, those expectations from our parents, maybe a society that kind of forced us to be a certain way. So it's a challenge to then switch your mindset or switch those expectations. So I think it's, again, closing that gap of our experiences, of our expectations, and just making up our minds. And then watching the process unfold, I think it's similar. We can go back to the analogy of the plant, right? I think that when you start, just like when you plant a seed, you don't know what's happening. It doesn't look like anything is happening. And then one day you see a little bud and it encourages you, right? You keep watering, you keep caring for the plant, and you see the stem, then you see the blossom. And then gradually, it takes time before it gets to fruit. But you see those little growth signs that encourage thinking. You'll start to see, when you look, you'll start to see those signs that let you know that you're, you know, this is the right way to be. It doesn't feel as challenging because it's like you trust that the child will be what they're meant to be. And so you focus on what is within your control, yourself, the environment, the opportunities that you offer, but then you allow the child to become who they're going to be. And I think it's one of those things that as you do it, the more you do it, the better you get at it, you know. But it's first a decision. It's first a conscious choice that you make, and then you just stick to it and keep going. That's what I think. Simone, what about you? What do you think helps?
Yeah, I think also knowing that we are letting them become the best version of themselves, and then we can just let go of the rest, right? Mm-hmm. Because actually, when someone looks at me and gives me lots of space to be myself, I can grow in many different directions and have many possibilities. And I think many of us have got to our adulthood and realized, oh, that was just an expectation that I had from my parents, or that was just an expectation that everyone's meant to go to university and get married and have kids and these kind of things. And actually, I don't want to put that onto my child. And so I think that Montessori is what Jennifer said at the beginning, is like actually finding the joy in parenting again. So how fun is it to go to the playground and actually see a child like doing things for themselves, but we're there to support them, just scaffold a little bit of skills. Okay, they haven't been able to climb up that thing before. How little help do I need to give them, and how much help do I need to give them? I don't want to actually hold their body as they climb up that climbing frame, because then they're going to fall down. But I can be there to maybe just spot them, you know, because they're going up higher than they've been before. How many times has your child climbed up a tree and they've just gone a little bit higher than you were expecting? And you're there just to not to say, oh, don't worry, you're going to fall, and telling them not to climb higher and those kind of things, but just say, oh, can you find a branch where you can put your foot on? Is that making you feel secure? Press on it. Is that a safe branch? And you're actually giving them the skills they need to climb down the tree before you just go up and rescue, you know?
Right. As a guide, it makes sense to me. Okay, so we're going to take a break and we're going to talk a little bit. We've sold people. They're like, I'm all in. I want the Montessori life. We're going to talk a little bit about practical guidelines when we come back.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
Margaret, it's an exciting news day.
An exciting news day indeed, Amy.
A few years ago, we launched our first spinoff podcast, Toddler Purgatory, hosted by the hilarious Blair Brooks and Molly Lloyd.
And guess what? Now Blair and Molly are back with their all-new podcast, Unsticking It.
You know Blair and Molly as two busy moms and actors. And somewhere between potty training and the pandemic, they both felt like they lost their creative kaboom.
In their new podcast, Unsticking It, they are going to talk about how all of us can get back to what lights us up after motherhood. Amy, I need this.
Me too. And Blair and Molly will be talking to fellow imaginative minds. We're talking actors, artists, and creators of all kinds about how we can all unstick ourselves from whatever muck we're stuck in.
Follow, subscribe, and listen to Unsticking It wherever you get your podcasts.
That's Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks.
Okay, so Simone, in the book, you talk about the triumvirate, these kind of three ideas that are the backbone, for lack of a better word, of the Montessori system. So people have been listening. They're like, I love this. I love the plant analogy. Juniper has me sold on that idea. I want now to start looking into this idea further. They're going to get the book, obviously, but let's talk them through these sort of three central ideas of Montessori, starting with raising our children in the spirit of respect, love, and understanding. It's a big one.
It is, because respect comes from actually respecting each other, right? If I can't say, oh, you have to respect me. In fact, it builds from trust and respecting each other. Love, because love is actually at the core. And instead of fear, which is the other side of love, is like, how can I actually approach my child with love, as opposed to worried that they're going to get into drugs or worried that they're going to, you know, not develop or ever learn to read and those kind of things. So we're always coming back to love. And understanding is what Juniper said as well, is reading books, educating ourselves on how children develop and how we can support their development. And in one thing we do in Montessori as well is we remove obstacles to their development. And with a very young child, it could be, you know, the cute overalls that we wear, but when they're learning to use the toilet, those overalls are really a pain. You know, they're not going to help their development. So it's a bit like, let's take the overalls off and wear something that's going to be supportive. And that's the same as they're going through childhood. Like, even it could be, oh, they're not packing away their things when we get home from school. I always have to take their lunchbox out and I find moldy lunchboxes in their class. And actually, instead, how can we scaffold the skills and support them, understand them, and realize, oh, my child's now entering the age from 6 to 12. In that age, they actually haven't got the external order that they had when they were a young child. And so how can I set up a system? It might be that we make with them a little checklist of the things that they need to do when they get home from school, and they can check those off. Oh, I need to take my lunchbox out. I need to put my dirty sports clothes into the laundry basket. And then I'm going to make sure I have a snack, because otherwise I get hangry. You know, it might be that just some scaffold that will help them, and they've come up with it and they've designed it in the way that they feel good about it. And then you can just point to the sign and say, oh, before you go off to hang out with friends, these are the three things we need to do. And you can just point to the chart of the thing that they've actually come up with. So that's kind of how we can parent in a Montessori way. And the other parts of the triumvirate, like, because you get a lot of parenting books that tell you what you're meant to do, like we said at the very beginning of the interview. And instead, what I love about Montessori is we've got two other parts. And one is like the activities, and the other is setting up the home. And the activities help give your child meaning and things that they feel passionate about, things that they're working to master. And then they actually regulate themselves because they're interested in what they're playing with or helping around the home, and how we can help them to be a full human. Because it's not just about academics, reading and writing, but actually about the world around us and engaging in the world. And, you know, sometimes less screens as well, but we also know that technology exists in their lives and how we can manage that. And then you have this environment, which is set up so that they feel like they're a part of the home and that is our helper. In Montessori, we use environment for the classroom, or it could be for the home. And in our classrooms, we set things up so the children can help themselves, so they can make choices for themselves, so they can feel empowered. And we do the same thing at home. Instead of us having to, like, basically, I think if you looked at a lot of communication in families, you just see a lot of directions. We have to do this, and we have to do that, and we have to do this. And that's what a lot of our communication is about. And instead, when you step back and you set up the environment, like about what snacks they can eat, for example, why don't I actually set up a little area in the kitchen that is their snack area? And the other thing you could do, like if you want your children to make their own lunches, you know, a lot of people are still making their children's lunches to take to school, but instead the children actually and get to choose what's in their lunchbox, and then they're more likely to actually eat what's in their lunchbox as opposed to bringing it home and you're like, oh, they didn't eat their things again. And I said, oh, would you like to choose what's in your lunchbox? And then again, having acceptable options available for them in the fridge, maybe on one shelf of the fridge, to make it easy for them to have success. And so that's part of using the environment to also help in that parenting process.
Let me give voice to the people who are listening and are saying, okay, but my kid would only pack gummy bears for lunch. And my kid would, like, my kid can't be trusted. I get that these people, they sound very smart and fancy and their kids must be angels, but my kid would never do these things. What do you say to people who say, this doesn't sound like my child?
I can imagine. Exactly. It sounds like a parenting whiz, but actually also I did say acceptable options, and that acceptable options is very important because we can also teach our children what feeds our body, what nourishes our body, and nothing's a bad food, but how much gummy bears makes us feel good and not feel good. And these are the things that we're taking to school, and these are the things that we're not taking to school. They can be involved in making the shopping list to come and do the groceries with us. And actually from 6 to 12-year-olds, unfortunately, we mostly live in big cities, so they can't go independently unless they live in a small village, but we could actually stand at the door of the supermarket and they can actually go in with their shopping list and we can just supervise from the door of the supermarket and they can feel empowered, like, oh, I'm choosing from this list of options what I would actually do. So we're always guiding them. They're going to make bad decisions. I remember we had an opportunity to go to a restaurant where you could serve as much chocolate mousse as you wanted. So we all took enormous bowlfuls of it, you know, and we all felt really ill the next day. And my children's conclusion wasn't that I'm a bad parent. It was just like, I'm never going to eat so much chocolate mousse again.
Right.
So they actually learn from their mistakes. So there's
learning involved.
Always learning.
Exactly. And just before we leave, I want to touch on, because you do touch on in the book, and Jennifer, maybe you can talk about children with different needs developmentally. Is Montessori, does it make sense for kids who might be on the spectrum, kids who have disabilities? How does this pertain if somebody's listening and thinking, my kid's not just outside of this because they would eat too many gummy worms, but my kid is outside of this because they have different needs?
So I really think, and we agree that Montessori is for every child, because it follows the child. It follows each individual child. It creates an environment that meets your child's needs. It's not prescriptive in the sense that it says at 2 years old, you must do this. It tells you what to look for and then how to meet the different needs of your child or your children. So Montessori, in my experience, and I think, you know, it's been around for over a century, and it has really been tried with children in different countries of different capacities with different needs. And it works because, again, it's looking at the individual child. It allows each child to grow at their own pace. It provides an environment that is flexible to meet the child's needs. A lot of times the materials, I'm talking now about a Montessori classroom or even in a Montessori home, the toys are toys that appeal to children who have different needs, because it's usually it provides sensory feedback, but it's not overwhelming. The environment has set up in such a way that it's like Simone said, less is more. And so those environments, I find, allow children that have additional needs to really thrive, because again, the environment is modifiable. Environment responds to the child, whatever the child's needs are. It calls for the adults to slow down and observe the child and respond to the child. And that's exactly what children, every kind of child, but especially children who have additional needs, that's what they need. Someone observing them and responding to their needs. So yes, regardless of what your child's needs are, you can definitely apply these ideas, because it's, again, individualized. It allows you to meet your child's needs. We set boundaries and give freedom, but boundaries for your specific child and freedoms for your specific child. And you can always pull back or allow more as your child needs.
Excellent. The book, The Montessori Child, A Parent's Guide to Raising Capable Children with Creative Minds and Compassionate Hearts, is available now wherever books are sold. Simone, tell us where people who have been intrigued by this conversation can find more resources about Montessori.
Yeah, so obviously we'd love them to read our book. You can find lots of free resources on my website, which is themontessorinotebook.com. And Juniper also has a beautiful Instagram, Nduomo, Montessori Nduomo, and also her school. There's lots of snapshots of children in the classroom and how you can then apply those principles at home. And that's Fruitful Orchard Montessori School. So hopefully those help the families. There's lots of things there, from like activities lists that give you ideas based on your child's interests. There's lots of free resources that you can check out and find out how to find that balance between setting limits and giving them freedom. And I hope it will be a lot of help for families to bring a little bit of Montessori into their homes.
Excellent. I really recommend this book and I really enjoyed this conversation. Thanks so much for talking to me today.
Thanks so much for having us, Margaret. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Margaret.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.